What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 4 of The Syndicate. I have a special guest with me. Every guest is a special guest, but I have the notorious, the infamous Ty Frank.
What's and up, Dan? It's a pleasure, bro.
I appreciate you coming on. You know, we've met in, I met you in Miami, and I didn't think that you were that bad of a guy as everyone made you out to be on Twitter. So we're going to talk about the Twitter drama that went down. Why is Ty canceled? And we're just gonna talk about everything and kind of shoot the shit. So I don't really have anything planned for this episode, but I'm excited to have Ty here. Finally, we're able to get it done and get his perspective on everything that went down. And then we're gonna talk about business and some other things, man. So you know,
I'm Ty, excited. I'm excited. My only goal is to finish this bottle of rosé before the end of the podcast.
So. The burning question that everyone wants to know, brother, is what happened? Why are you banned from Twitter? And are you going to fight Luke Alexander?
Okay. You say you didn't prepare for this. Maybe you had a couple questions up your sleeve. What happened on Twitter? Why I got banned was very simple. So like I put out Agency Empire and I had my social media guy. I was doing this thing where I was like distributing my tweets. So I had like 10, 15 people that I was fucking with, that I could send a tweet here, a tweet there, a thread here, a thread there. Like, yo, like this, reply to this, maybe from time to time retweet.
Yeah.
Literally everyone does that on Twitter. And I don't think it's like a immoral strategy. So I don't know why people, oh, he faked this, he faked that. I don't understand that. But basically I did that. And I had my social media guy DM a couple people. Hey, could you like and reply to this tweet when I launched Agency Empire? 100% my fault. I take full fucking responsibility. I should have told him, hey, don't DM someone on Twitter to do that. And then I guess Twitter got a hold of those DMs and Twitter doesn't like it when you, I guess, fake in air quotes engagement like that. So that's what got me booted.
So yeah. And it has to do with now this is something I don't necessarily do this, but there's a couple groups, obviously, you know, and I make sure the tweet gets circulated to the groups and the way
it should
be done is you have to remove the UTM link, right? Because every account has a specific UTM link that tracks it. And like for any of you guys that are on Twitter and like are thinking about doing this, make sure you remove the tracking so they can't see who sent it out, right? Because and the issue probably was where you were sending it out and it had the link on it, and then they noticed that everyone that you were doing that for engagement, and that's why you got suspended.
That makes sense. So I would just avoid doing it on Twitter. Just take it to Telegram, take it to WhatsApp. But the thing is, I didn't do that for long. I did it for like 3 months. I really got big on Twitter pretty much purely organically. At least the first like 6 or 7 months until like June, July, 2021.
And what's interesting is, and we spoke about this when we were in Miami, but I've never really had a problem with you. And I'm want to know kind of why you think, you know, people came after you and they came after you with pitchforks and fire in the way that they did. And it seemed to me that you were just kind of like an easy target. And the reason I say that is because you did have some controversial opinions. And I remember when I was a very small account, I think I had like 100 followers, right? Now I'm over 10,000. But that being said, I remember publicly disagreeing with you on a couple things, right? And, you know, I'm all for the disagreement and the perspective, right? You know, the more information people have, the better decisions that they can make, right? But I think my thing is like the way you were saying things, it was like, you're not going to be successful unless you have X, Y.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's who I am. Like I've always been the guy to fucking push the boundaries so far until they break. And I've been like that since I was a baby. Like I used to fucking get banned off forums all the time. Like I used to be on like music producing forums, future producers. There was this forum called Gear Sluts. I was on Rap Genius back when I was like 12. I used to fucking get banned because I just like trolling with people. I like fucking with people. I love pushing the boundaries and just getting reactions out of people. Now it's a blessing and a curse. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes that could be good in business. Sometimes like for instance, it doesn't work that well on Twitter. You know, depending on the situation. But I think that was why I was like literally trying to be controversial. And I didn't really believe, I believed what I was saying 70%. And I tweeted something at 100%, like black and white. I believed it was a little, 60-70% in that area, and it was still in the gray area, but I just tweeted it like it was either black or white 100%.
Yeah.
Like if you're, what was the tweet? If you're over 20, it was back in July, 7 months ago. If you're over 25 and still have a 9-to-5, your family's ashamed of you. Mm-hmm. Right. And a lot of the stuff I tweet for myself, like I have really fucking high standards. I think I'm a fucking loser. Like I'm 24 years old, probably made 200 grand last year. Living in Miami, beautiful. Like I can spend money on whatever I want. I'm not fucking rich as shit. It's getting there, but I think I'm a fucking loser compared to where I want to be at. If I'm 5-10 pounds overweight, I think I'm a fat fucking piece of shit. I got to fucking get back on my shit. Right. I was like 80-90 pounds. Now I'm like, back to 195. But I just have those high standards. And sometimes I tweet like that. Sometimes I just tweet coming from my point of view and it's just my standards. And I guess people thought I was imposing those standards on other people. And they got mad, which I totally understand. And, any response is warranted. If a tweet makes you feel a certain way, you might not like that person for saying that. You might respond in a certain way where you're insulting that person. And I totally understand. No hard feelings on my end. So,
yeah. And the thing about Twitter is people think that they're entitled to their opinions, and which people are, but people are very vocal about their opinions. And
yeah.
Twitter is a way, and it's a platform where people with these opinions are able to voice them in an echo chamber around a certain topic. And what I'm getting at there is what it allows you to do. And this is something that happened to me specifically because I had this tweet go viral and I got a shit ton of hate for it. But what I did was I doubled down on it. And
I loved you for it.
I went full narcissist fuckboy. And the thing is like I had to do that or I was going to get my ass kicked. And the thing is about Twitter is like when you invite those types of responses, any of the rhetoric, and you'll understand what I mean by this, any of the rhetoric that other people create and the narrative, because once it's out on Twitter and people are able to respond, they're able to create a narrative that may or may not exist, right?
100%.
So when you are getting people riled up, anything that they say can and will be used against you. And here's what I mean. Because when they say that, you could be on top of the world, you'd be multimillionaire, you'd be in a Lambo, right? Like let's use these metrics, right? Penthouse in Miami, in a Lambo, making millions of dollars. And one person can say one thing that'll change the narrative of how they think about you. Now, when you invite that response constantly, you're going to get a lot of hate, and you're also going to get a lot of invitation from people who are creating that narrative about you, and it'll start to change their perspective of you. Because you're a guy, based on when I followed you in the past, bro, like you understand business, right? Like you've done business, like you understand very, very subtle things that a lot of people don't understand, which I respect about you, but also that gets lost in the noise of all of the fucking hate. And so when you allow others to control the narrative instead of creating that narrative yourself and doubling down on those things, what it does is it invites a lot of unwanted hate and a lot of unwanted response that changes the way people see you. I think one of the biggest things that I didn't like that you would say was like, if you're not at 50 grand, like in order to get to 50 grand a month, you need all these things, right? And it's very black and white. And the thing is, it's
shout out to Ben Settle,
but it's not black and white. And I think my only disagreement with you was when you perpetuate that type of narrative, it gets a lot of people stuck.
I agree. I think, dude, what you said was fucking super spot on. And I could definitely go back and reflect. And I've made a couple mistakes. And the thing is, people make me out as like, oh, you're a scammer. And then I always ask them, okay, who did I scam? Like show me some evidence. And they just never reply. A scammer and a liar. Those two things I'm not, but what I am is someone who's definitely made a couple mistakes, maybe a handful, maybe 5-10 mistakes on relatively, some big mistakes on Twitter that, I've looked back and I've learned from, and I appreciate what you just said as well. Because I definitely learned from that. So thank you, bro.
And I appreciate that, man. And what it is, it's really like, it's a lesson not only in human psychology, but it's a lesson in narrative control, and it's a lesson in PR. And obviously, I know you made a couple mistakes, right? And not to dwell on the past, but you allowed other people, and from my perspective, you allowed a lot of other people to control and create a narrative about you that was necessarily not entirely true.
Yeah, I agree.
And some of the things you did with, you know, some of the course artwork and shit, like, it became a meme. And what it allowed you to do was...
I think anything would have became a meme, my course artwork.
So
I think they were just looking, my fucking profile picture became a meme, my fucking course, yeah. Like anything that I would have done visually would have become a meme.
And so you didn't do a good job. And we both know this, you did a terrible job of controlling the narrative, right? And now moving forward, obviously, exactly. And this is something I told you in Miami, you know, we did talk about a couple of things, but this is like now with you doing what you're doing on LinkedIn, like, you know, one of my boys is on LinkedIn and he's getting a lot of lead flow from LinkedIn, but he says, you know, Ty's a rock star on LinkedIn. Right. And it seems like, and I haven't seen your LinkedIn, but it seems like you're kind of doing the same stuff, maybe toned it down a little bit that you were doing on Twitter to build your following originally. And you're doing it on LinkedIn. You seem to be doing really well.
And toned it down a couple notches for sure. Especially LinkedIn, like, bro, you know, money Twitter is like so different than fucking LinkedIn. Like, LinkedIn, I'm not going to talk shit on LinkedIn, but people on money Twitter, I identify with their like mindset a lot more. You know, I think both people, the thing is like, okay, people on money Twitter, they think they are not virtue signaling. They think they are not sheep. They think they are not XYZ, but they are just in, a lot of them aren't, but a lot of them are just in the opposite side. Like, for example, with this Russia and Ukraine shit, if you're always a fucking contrarian, you're always, even if the media says something that's actually true, you're going to believe the opposite. You got to just fucking take shit at face value and really make your own decisions, not be stuck in one train of thought, right? And on LinkedIn, they're a lot more, I would say like PC.
Yes.
Than Twitter. Twitter accepts more of that individualistic type of like mindset and opinion a lot more than I would say LinkedIn does. LinkedIn is very like Silicon Valley in that aspect.
And what's interesting about LinkedIn is, I mean, the thing is like the chances of the mob coming after you with pitchforks and wanting to burn your house down, the chances of that happening, unless you say something really crazy, it's as close to zero as it possibly can get.
I think so. And I think, not to cut you off, but I think a big part of that as well is because you can't be anonymous on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the accounts on Twitter, like the people who talk the most shit, are anonymous. And that's for good reason, because they fucking, if people knew their real names and they're saying the shit they're saying, they get fucked. So I think a big part of it is that you can't stay anonymous on LinkedIn. I think they literally check your ID when you sign up or some shit.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. So Luke isn't anonymous.
Yeah, I actually like Luke. Anonymous.
And that brings me to one of the first questions I asked is, you know, what happened with the fight?
So let me tell you exactly what happened with the fight. What happened was 3 straight months from July to October. And I already forgot about it. I'm moving on, but let's talk about it anyways. That's why we're here. For 3 straight months, people were just shitting on me, right? And I was being completely silent. And maybe I put out some proof here and there. Hey, I put out a fuck ton of proof. Like, here are my fucking royalty statements for the past 4 years, right? Here's some conversations with clients, awards, whatever. Anyways, I was completely silent. I didn't like hit back at anyone for 3 straight months. And then I was like, okay, my engagement's going down. People are controlling the narrative. This is obviously not working. So let me try a different strategy. Because Luke, there was one thing where he said, oh, well, don't you even not have an agency? Some shit like that. Don't you even not even run an agency right now? He was trying to like, you know, throw insults. That's not even, it's not even an insult. Like, yeah, I don't run an agency. Like I'm doing other business, you know, which is potential, like better business model. You just keep moving up, getting into better businesses. But yeah, 3 months, I didn't say shit. And then Luke said something like that, like, oh, don't you even not run an agency? And then I'm like, all right, I was silent for 3 straight months. Let me switch up the strategy. Let me actually go back at Luke and see how it does. You know what I mean? If I could actually fight back and it'll actually work. And that's how that started. I never had a problem with Luke. He, I don't think, has a problem with me. We literally met in my, like, we've seen each other.
I saw.
And we've seen each other. Like, we dabbed. Like, I fuck with, like,
you guys.
I don't fuck with some of the shit he did. I don't fuck with some of the shit he did. I think he, I would rather not talk shit. I would rather not talk shit here, but I think he twisted the truth a couple times, and that's where I'll leave it at. But I fuck with Luke. Like, we play, he comes, we play basketball. I think he's cool. Like, he's a cool dude. And I'm sure, like, I think he fucks with me. and that's the thing. But what happened after that, after I went back at him, I went back and forth, whatever. And then this guy, a random guy with 300 followers tweeted like, oh, you guys should fight. Some shit like that. Some shit that was like insinuating that we should fight. And then Logan Fitz quote tweeted that. And he's like, I'm paraphrasing here. Ty, you win. Luke, you win. Miami, January, whatever. He was like, yo, he brought it to our attention. And then Luke was like, I'm down. Da, 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 da. And then I'm like, what should I fucking do? I'm not. Luke, you know what I mean? One-on-one. I'm not saying who'd win or not.
Can you fight?
You know, yeah, I could fight. I'm 6'3", 200. 195.
A little bigger than 6'3", bro.
You think so?
You're about 6'4" and a half, right? Like,
oh, come on.
Dude, I'm six foot four. Regardless of what shoes you're wearing, you're like a quarter inch to maybe a half inch taller than I am. You're a pretty big dude. But okay. This being said, right? Like, everyone thinks, you know, Ty is a short guy. He's a small guy. He's not a small guy, right? That being said, like, I think your biggest mistake there was waiting 3 months to try to take control of the narrative.
Yep.
And what the lesson is, I think, for you is moving faster. If something ever happens like that again, where you need to avert a crisis, you need to move a lot faster. You can't wait 3 months to hit back. It has to be like maybe a week tops, or maybe hours.
Yeah.
And I remember you, because you're doing some different stuff right now. You're doing stuff with software companies, and you're doing different things.
It's very related to what I was doing on Twitter, in terms of helping agencies grow and shit like that.
So what's interesting is something I said to you is, and I remember you told me this in Miami, is the people that you're working with, you don't want to seem childish for accepting a challenge like that, right? And what I said to you is it's all about how you spin it. And this is a lesson, everyone listening. It is all about how you spin something that determines the level of which you're going to avert the crisis. And the reason I say that is because a lot of guys in software, a lot of these tech guys, they're not the most, they're probably not combat ready, right? I'm not going to call them dorks because they're not.
No comment.
Crazy businesses. But what's interesting is I told you and I came up with it in 15 seconds is you could have said, look, like, who do you want to work with? Somebody who backs down from a challenge or somebody who rises to the occasion?
Fair. Let me tell you this. That's very fair. And I appreciate it. I remember when you told me that at the wharf, I was in the mindset of I've already failed twisting, like trying to paint a narrative for 3-4 months. I'm going to fucking, if I would do that, you know, I would fuck up with that. I'm not LeBron James, I guess. I can't fucking put a statement out and, you know, call Stephen A like, hey, tell him this. Skip Bayless, what's up? Tell him this. I'm not on that level. So I can't fucking spin the narrative like that. That's the only thing. Like, if I try to do that, I still think people could have seen it like, hey, this guy's fucking childish and immature. I want to partner. I've partnered with fucking, you know, these companies that do $10, $20, $50 million in revenue a year. Like I said, I don't want them looking up my name when they decide to partner with me or not and see Ty versus Luke, a cage match, Miami, January 22nd, 2022. Bring the booze, bring the girls, pogs, whatever. I don't want them to see that shit. You know what I mean? So that was just my mindset. It's not, like I said, Luke, I like Luke. I wish him the best. And I hope he's like, I think he's killing it with Closer Cards, right? All the best to Luke. He seems like a good guy to me. But yeah, it just didn't make sense from a PR standpoint at all.
See, I think personally, I disagree. And here's why. Okay. Because if you take control of the narrative with such a high level of conviction, your conviction can make almost anything true. And the more you perpetuate your narrative that you create with conviction, the more you can spin it later. And the reason I say that is because I think that it could have done wonders for your brand. I think it could have done wonders for your credibility, win or lose. And I think you probably would have made a lot of money from it too. And I
see, much?
I see your point. And I see your point, and I see why you approached the situation the way you did. I would have 100% approached it differently. But I think now your lesson that you're learning, continually learning every day, is to have more conviction in the things that you're not only doing, but the things that you're saying and the message that you put out. Because when you have conviction in the things you say, right or wrong, you stand by your word. Right. And I think that was the nail in the metaphorical nail in the coffin for your brand on Twitter. And that's just how I saw it. And like I said, I'm an outside observer, so I don't know the full story, but I do know that there, you know, people
have said, we can get into it,
whatever. But I think that was even the nail in the coffin is because you said that you were going to do it and then it didn't happen. Right.
Yeah.
And that conviction is where I think everyone was like, all right, fuck Ty Frankel.
Sure. Nick. So what happened was Nick Abraham called me and he's like, dude, you're being a fucking moron with this Luke fight shit. Like, he planted the seed in my head that, hey, all these SaaS companies you're trying to partner with are going to look at you. And he was 100% right. And I thank him for that. And maybe, you know, whatever, shit could have gone a million different ways, but he planted that seed in my head, and that's why I didn't do the fight, basically.
Interesting.
I'm not scared of Luke. I'm not scared of getting punched in the fucking face. You know what I mean? So, and I think I had a good shot. Everyone was betting on Luke, like a 1,000,000-to-1 odds. Ty's going to – I don't think – like, you know what I mean? Luke's had – Luke's – don't want to get into it too much. He's trained, what, 6 months, 12 months? I haven't trained at all, but – I think, you know, if I trained for a couple months, I would have had a good shot for sure.
I think it would have been a good fight. We would have sold a lot of tickets, made a lot of money.
Yeah, but that's the thing. People saying, oh, you're going to make so much money. Da, da, da. It's like, dude, what I'm working on now, I personally believe with 100% conviction, is a multi-deca-million dollar play. So I don't care about a quick $20,000, $50,000 bag. I really could not care less. I've lost $20,000, $50,000 in business deals gone wrong in fucking companies I started for 3 months and then disbanded because of one reason or another. $20,000 or $50,000 doesn't move the needle. So that's also, it's like, okay, let's up it to a fucking million. Then I could maybe think about it. Right. But it's like, all right, so Atari, I'm gonna give you $20,000, $50,000. It's like, dude, I couldn't care fucking less. $20,000, $50,000.
I think that fight would have done $500,000 in sales.
I think maybe more.
Pay-per-view. I think
more. Sell merchandise. You would have sold merchandise. You would have, come on, man. We could have partnered with like Southwest Airlines to get people down here. Like, we could have done numbers on that.
Yeah, man. I think you're in an interesting position. Right. So, and I think, like I said, and I'll just reiterate for everyone listening, right? Like, when take everything with a grain of salt and never believe that one person's opinion or one thing somebody says, especially when someone has a following, is absolute fact. Always do due diligence and think for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of contrarian opinions, a lot of ideologies, and a lot of narratives are very easy to latch onto because people identify with them. And for the listeners, create a lot of people subscribe to the groupthink that occurs when they latch on to a narrative, right? We see this on the right and left with politics, Russia and Ukraine, Corona, mask. We see it with everything. Make your own decisions. just because I say something or just because Ty says something doesn't mean that it's fact, or just because someone says something doesn't mean that it's fact. I strongly believe in everything I say, and I think you should listen to me, right? The reason you guys are listening to this podcast is because I have things that you guys like listening to, and I have opinions and thoughts that you guys want to hear. But if there's that, never let a good crisis go to waste as well, right? Mm. If there ever something in business comes up, right? All attention can be profitable. And I think one of your biggest mistakes was not monetizing the attention in the way that you could have. Obviously, there we can go down the list, right? But like I said, I don't think you're a bad guy. I think you fucked up, and I think you're learning from it now. And I think you're building.
Everything happens for a reason.
I think
what happened could have. Okay, so in business, like whenever I fired an employee, or whenever I like stopped working with a client, or whenever just a door shut, it was literally always for a good reason. It always led to greener pastures. And I think, you know, it might not seem like it for some. Oh, Ty, I've seen this. Ty's down bad. Ty's down super bad. Ty's, you know, fucking eating off the floor and shit. Unfortunately, that's not the case. But I think, you know, what happened on Twitter, I definitely made a good amount of mistakes. I never scammed anyone. I never lied. Like, that's just, you know, it really hurts my heart to see that. People just shitting on my name. Yep. Like, just straight calling me a scammer, calling me a liar without, like, it's just baseless. And that's what actually ticks me off. It's not the shit that they're calling me a bad person. It's not the shit that they're making, yo, X seven figure agency owner, whatever. It's really the shit that they're calling me a liar and a scammer, which really throws dirt on my name for no reason. Because I know I didn't do those things. I don't like being accused of shit that I didn't do. Huh?
It's because you didn't control the narrative.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there are some interesting ideas, and I'll just say it here. You could have spun your music agency and been like, look, and I remember the tweet where you got into the thread. You're like, I made $1 million over the course of like 8 or 9 years. Now.
Okay. That was spun. Can I talk about that real quick? Was spun.
Let me finish my point here.
Go ahead.
So the reason I say that is because the way you marketed yourself and the way that you went about it, it wasn't disingenuous, but it can come off as disingenuous.
Okay.
Full transparency and full authenticity, if you led with that, I think it would have prevented a lot of problems, because the narrative was created where you said one thing, I have a seven-figure agency, right? And a lot of people say, okay, seven-figure agency, that means he's doing $1 million a year, right? I remember the tweet, it was a year ago now, literally probably to the day, a year ago now where I read it. And it was like, okay. And it was the financial breakdown of the business. And you were like, I made 150 grand profit on like $1 million. Right.
No, that wasn't, you're paraphrasing. You got that a little wrong. It wasn't 150 grand on $1 million. It might've been
a year, right?
It wasn't. No, I never made $1 million in a year. So I think where that issue came through was I said seven figure agency. I made $1 million. Sure, over 7 years, the first 4 or 5 years, I barely made anything,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like I was a freelance music producer from when I was 14 years old. So since May 5th, 2012 is when I downloaded FL Studio, almost 10 years ago to the day in two months. And those first like 4 or 5 years, I didn't, you know, maybe first 5 or 6 years until really 2019, 20, I didn't really make shit. So people say, oh, $1 million in 7 years. It was really $1 million. It was really 900,000, 800,000 in really 2 or 3 years. And guess what? I literally quit the music business November 2020. I don't like talking too much about money, but I got a $43,000 royalty check 2 weeks ago, like February 19th or whatever, from BMI. And I get those $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 checks every 3 months. And I quit the fucking music business 14, 15 months ago. So if you wanted to be real, those royalties will keep continuing for 5, 10, 20 years. I actually made $2, $3 million. If you want to consider those royalties for the next 5, 10, 20 years in my agency. So actually, I was understating it. But I understand the seven-figure agency stuff. I never made $1 million in a year. I did say seven-figure agency. I could see where people get that confused. 100%. I probably shouldn't have said that. But yeah, it wasn't seven figures in a year. I never said seven figures in a year. I did say seven figure agency. It was really seven figures over two, like I said, 800,000-900,000 over 2 or 3 years. And then the final 100,000-200,000 or so from when I was like 14 to 19 or 20.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and I think where a lot of people got it mixed up, like I said, is because you didn't lead with, we did $1 million in revenue over 7 or 8 years. Right. Yeah. Even if you said, I did 900 grand in the past 3 years, bro, that's nothing to scoff at. Right. Bro, a lot of people aren't even making five. And I know what the BMI checks look like. I know I've seen what they look like and everything I know, but you're doing 120, 160K from what you did in the music business, which is nothing to laugh at. Yeah. And nothing to scoff at.
That's what I'm living off right now.
I know how hard it is to make money in the music business.
That's another thing. People were saying like, oh, Ty didn't build a marketing agency to seven figures. So how could he teach you to build a marketing agency to seven figures? First of all, building a music agency, a music house is, I don't want to overstate it. I don't want to understate it, but it's a lot harder than building a marketing agency. It's so much fucking harder. It's so much harder. So me building that to 50K a month in 2020, is fucking like building a marketing agency to 200K a month, right? And also another thing, oh, Ty didn't build his marketing agency to $1 million a year, so we can't teach you to. Did Red Auerbach ever do a 360 between the legs dunk? Did fucking Larry Brown ever dunk from the free throw line? No. You don't have to fucking be able to do literally, have done literally everything to be able to coach people, to be able to teach people how to do X, Y, Z. As long as you know how to do it, as long as it's verified, it's techniques that, you know, you've done or, you know, you've gotten from somewhere, whatever, you can teach that to people. I don't see the issue there. Like Larry Brown never dunked from the fucking free throw line.
So you know? I agree, but I also disagree with you. I think that there are key transferable skills that you can position in order to teach people how to operate in certain areas of business, but not create the full business. Right. I can teach people how to run an email marketing agency because I know how to do it. I can teach people how to sell because I did $40 million in revenue sales over the course of 2 years. It was just shy of 40 million and round up two or three deals.
That's fire.
I did 890 deals. So it was close to 1,000. I don't say I did 1,000 deals. I say I did close to 1,000 deals. I generated about 40 million in revenue. It was a couple hundred grand shy. If I had stayed with the company another week or two, I would
you get rev share off that?
I got commission. I was commission salesperson. Okay. Now, let me ask you this, but I know you don't want to really go into the numbers, but like on the 900 grand, how much was profit? Because I know in the music business, there's a lot of expenses.
A lot of fucking expenses. And that's why I actually disbanded the music agency. So the last year we did like 600,000 and probably 150 to 200 profit. And Guess what? 2/3 of that was through BMI, which was paid to me as an individual. So I could literally not run it through my fucking company. It was such a shit business model, which is why we only had like one or two competitors. Everyone. So we were basically creating music in house. I was executive producing it. We had A&Rs, production coordinator, admin assistants, managers, whatever. Whoops. And we sold it to Red Bull, Warner, Universal, the Red Bull meme. But that was one of our biggest clients. You know, I fucking love working with those guys. They're awesome. You know, shout out to Jeff and Martin over there who are definitely not going to listen to this podcast. But yeah. I drink half a bottle of rosé. The profit margin. It was just we had all these like 2/3 of the fucking money was run through me as an individual. Sorry, 2/3 of the profit. So it's like we had 8 employees and the fulfillment was so fucking intense. We had to deal with all these rappers with their management and them like fucking cursing us out and clients yelling at us and all this. I had to fucking sit there for 3 hours and give notes on tracks. I really didn't like doing that, even though I was good at it. And we were squeezed. Like they were, for example, we were getting paid $500 to about $1,200 per song. We were spending $500, $600, $700 to paying these producers and vocalists to get these songs done, not including our team, not including my time. So basically we were almost even breaking even on the front end, and the royalties was the real money coming in, where it was just basically pure profit.
But you don't see royalties for a while.
No, you see them. I mean, dude, I started this shit 2014 when I was 16, producing for music for TV and film.
I mean, the new business, you don't see the royalties for a while.
You're right. For about a
depending on who you work with.
Yeah, a song. So it takes time to create a song, and then it get then they fucking master it, then they put it out. Then when it gets on TV, it takes 6 to 12 months for money to come in domestically from the US, and it takes 2 to 3 years for money to come in internationally. So that's why my checks have gotten fatter and fatter even after I left the music business. Right. And hopefully they keep on getting fatter, knock on wood.
Interesting. So, and you were really in a business, and especially the music business, it's very hard to stay profitable. Right.
Dude, it was tough.
I want to transition the conversation. I want to ask you about, so when you left the music business, I know you were on Twitter.
Yes, sir. And
so what did you do after that? Right. I know you had, what was it? Shutdown emails.
Yes, shutdown emails.
What happened?
So I was, yeah. So I ran that from probably November, December. We took a little break, like a month. November, December to like May. So November, December, like 2020 to May 2021. And what that was my cold outreach, cold email aids. Really just cold email. We didn't do any LinkedIn outreach, things like that. So we had 4 clients. It was me and like 3 Filipinos. I fucking, you know, Arvin, shout out to Arvin, shout out to Rose. Again, they're not listening to this. But yeah, we ran that shit. We had 4 clients and we were on the cusp of like, we got a couple people. We got like a couple of our clients, like 3, 4, 5
book calls. Cold email agency?
Yeah, cold email agency. We were getting paid like $300 per appointment. We got people like 4 or 5 book calls, a couple of our clients. And then it was just a lot of fucking work, dude. And the Twitter shit was taken off and like creating and selling courses and building a personal brand. And I never did any coaching, never did any one-on-one group coaching. I just had VIP Agency Lounge, which is like a video conference series, God Level First Lines with Daniel, Cold Email Wiz, and Big Money Skill Mastery in August. Those were the only ways I made it. I affiliated some stuff for like Devesh and Nick Abraham. But basically, yeah, that it was a way easier way to make money than this cold email agency. And I saw it bearing a lot more fruit within the next 2 or 3 years, right? The cold email agency, I saw, okay, what's the end game here? Like the fulfillment is fucking intense. I have to to do everything on myself. Like I had no high level thinkers with me. It was just me, similar to Shutdown Music. But I have to start everything from the ground up. And I already had my Twitter brand established. All I had to do was create a fucking course in 5 hours, make 30 grand in 6 days. That's what Big Money Skill Mastery did. Did like 730 sales, 30 grand in 6 days. And I thought, okay, this personal brand, I could sell courses. I could build SaaS companies. I could build a community. I could do XYZ. All of them are more scalable than an agency. And that's why I shut down emails, because the opportunity cost. Okay, I'm spending all like 50% of my time on Twitter growing my brand and on products and shit like that. 50% of my time was Shutdown Music, and the Twitter shit, the personal branding shit was just way more scalable. So I ended up ironically shutting down Shutdown Emails. You know, we had about 4 clients, you know, Shell Shock was a client, this company called Topalo Media, this app dev company, shout out to Boone, a couple other companies as well. But I ended up shutting that down. I refunded everyone their setup fees. I refunded everyone all the money they paid me. And I took a big ass fucking loss on that. And I think it was for good reason. I think it was a good decision because the opportunity cost was just too much to give up.
Now, I want to ask you about the course. You had First Line. What was it called?
God Level First Lines. Yeah. January, so, with Cold Email Wizard. January 2021 that came out.
So do you see a conflict of interest with selling something on teaching people how to run an agency to do emails, and then you shut down your email agency? Do you see, like, do you see how that it can kind of be like, like, yo, like, what the fuck? Like, now I think when I saw that you shut down that company, I was like, my first question is, why is he selling a course on a company that he doesn't run, or a company that he had run and you only had 4
right clients? I understand that point of like view.
Not to cut you off, but how much money did Shutdown Emails do?
Not much. And I said I refunded the whole, like everything to the clients because I didn't
10, you know what 10 I mean? Grand.
Fucking, I don't 10 grand, 12 grand. I fucking spent like 40 grand on it.
50 okay.
Grand, paying everyone and all that shit, subscriptions. Okay. Yeah. So we were in the hole. And that course, God Level First Lines, right? I've been cold emailing for 10 years.
Okay.
I had a hip hop blog when I was 14. I fucking reached out and interviewed when I was 14. Look him up, Master Ace, Eminem's idol. This guy's an underground rap legend. I interviewed Dice Raw from The Roots. I interviewed Rex, R-E-K-S from Boston, big underground rapper.
Okay.
I used to send my beats to everyone in the fucking industry. I got a placement with G Herbo. I was on his first mixtape in 2014. Welcome to Phazoland. I produced a song called Love to Stunt. 2014, I send out all these emails, right? Eventually I started Shutdown Music, fucking cold emailing Red Bull, cold emailing. I had like 25, 30 clients.
Okay.
Like 5-10 of them made up most of my revenue. So that's where I get the justification for selling that course. I literally sold that course when I fucking had a month old cold email agency. I sold that shit based off the fact that I've been cold emailing for 9-10 years. And I know how to do it at a fucking high ass level, not off the Shutdown email shit. That's not enough. If I fucking ran an agency for a month, I don't have enough experience to sell a course on how to cold email, but I've been doing it for 10 years. I got Red Bull as a client off cold email. I made hundreds of thousands with them. I got Warner Brothers. I made probably 100K with them. I got Universal. I signed a label deal with them, 120K a year upfront, plus all these royalties on the back end, right? So that's where the justification was for putting that course out.
I think it's righteous.
I think it's good. I think that's fucking 10 years of experience. Like,
and it's what, $70,000 in sales?
59.
I'm looking at it right now. Now, let me ask you this, bro. Like, why didn't you just sell it like that?
What did I sell it like? It was January 2020.
I'm looking at the sales page now, right? Like, why didn't you sell it like that instead? Because people knew that you had an email agency, right? Mm. And here's where I think another one of the disconnects is: people knew that you had an email agency, but you completely left out the fact that you have been emailing people for 10 years.
Yeah,
Ty, that's a great angle, bro.
No, let me check the page. I think Daniel wrote the sales page.
So the thing is like, I would have led with that. That's great.
Daniel wrote this.
Great social proof, and it's absolutely phenomenal. But
you're right.
You didn't sell it like that. And that's where, like, I think another point is literally, like, if you backed everything based on the experience that solely you did, right? Like, and didn't even say that you ran an email agency. It was just something that you were doing, but you backed it by, I have 10 years and this is what I've done to land clients like X, Y, and Z. Here's how you can do it too. That's the angle, right? Like, that is, that is the better angle than I'm running an email agency and I'm partnering with me and Dan are partnering and we're, you know, doing what we're doing now based on cold emailing.
I did talk about that a little bit. Like, I put out some threads, how I built my agency off cold email, but I think you're right. But listen, not to give me any excuses, and I take 100% responsibility for everything. It was my fault I got banned off Twitter. It was my fault everyone fucking didn't like me off Twitter. It's my fault that everything fucking happened. My fault, 1,000%. But one caveat, I literally was in the B2B market for 10 years, basically, at that point. I never have done anything B2C. I literally started my personal brand November 2020 off a fucking whim. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just do this. I don't have experience with landing pages. I don't have experience with marketing. All I did was fucking cold email my music. It was so fucking good. Before I got in the game, music for TV and film, all these fucking 40-year-old white dudes were making hip hop. And guess what? All my clients were hiring these fucking rock composers and classical composers that were good. They're like, hey, can you do hip hop too? And they were fucking hiring them, and they were making all these fucking, it used to be called Oprah Hop, because all this shit would be placed on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Trash. So when I came in, I grew up on hip hop, man. I had fucking Lil Bow Wow, Outkast, Busta Rhymes, Eminem, Nelly CDs when I was 7. Sweat Suit by Nelly. Fucking Lil Bow Wow, Beware of Dog. That was my shit. Stankonia. So I grew up on this shit. I make this super authentic hip hop, and they fucked with me. Like, it took me some time to break in. Obviously, I'm a young kid too. But they fuck with me. So I never had to make a fucking landing page. I never had to position something. I never had to work on my messaging. So I think that definitely affected it. I didn't have that macro point of view or bird's eye view that I definitely have now. And I appreciate you for giving me insight on as well. I think that was a contributor to it too. But again, I take like full responsibility. My fault, 1,000%.
Yeah, man.
Everything that fucking happened, you know?
Listen, like I said, I don't think you would have had a problem if you did a little more. See, I'm a guy like I usually don't pay for really anything, right? In terms of like information or stuff, right? And here's why.
Yeah.
I know that I can reverse engineer. And I think if you took a little bit more time on the front end, because when you take time on the front end, it makes a shit ton of money on the back end. And when you, if you had done like a little bit more research into how, into angles and marketing and studied how other people are doing things, I think you would have never had a problem on Twitter. Obviously hindsight 2020, but I don't think you would have had the problems that you have, right? Because of the experience that you had and everything, and you did build a big business, right? Like this is everyone listening who thinks Ty like doesn't understand business. Like the guy understands business. If you had taken a little bit more time and solely focused on here's what I've done and here's why I'm qualified to do it, right? Like, and show the receipts that you've had from these large clients, it wouldn't have become a meme. And I think you would have made a lot more money. Fuck the 60 grand. You could have made 600.
Okay. Here's where I have not pushback, but like, I think I did that. I literally had this thread where I put out like all my royalty statements, hella conversations with clients. I put out proof, like piece of proof after piece of proof. But listen, I'm not going to fucking put out three pieces of proof every day, every single day. I only have like 5 to 7 tweets a day and I want to grow my account.
Sure. Right?
So it's like, if I say something 10 times, let's say it gets 100,000 impressions and someone else says something, not someone else, an army of people says something 1,000 times over and over and over and over and fucking again, they're going to believe the army of people that say shit. They're going to look at my shit one time and then be like, oh, wow, Ty, maybe he's legit. Maybe he did some real. Forget about it. Two fucking seconds later when someone posts something else and they keep posting it over and over again.
Sure.
So that was a dilemma I had, man.
So I want to tell you this, right? Like, and obviously, so when you have a bigger account on Twitter, so I'm getting about 100 followers a day.
That's a good thing.
It scales up with the level of content. There's days I'll get 200. There's days I'll get 300. It scales up that when I had the viral thread, I got 1,000 a day about. Now, the issue is with Twitter is everything gets lost in an echo chamber in about 1 to 2 days, even the viral tweet. So my job, and I'm not sure if LinkedIn is the same way, but my job is to, and this is for anyone listening who wants to understand how Twitter works, you have to make sure that you're putting your old bangers, right? For lack of a better term, your old bangers in front of the new people, because they're not going to know who you are if they can't, whatever acquisition channel that they come through or however they find you, you need to make sure that you continually put the same, the stuff that you've said before in front of the new people, or they're not going to fucking know who you are.
You could literally delete it and repost it 6 months later.
Can retweet the old stuff. And get it back in front of the new people, back in front of the new people, back in front of the new people. And not only does that solidify your brand, but it also solidifies your credibility and gives you control of the narrative. And I think that's something that you could definitely have done better. And it's something that I've literally seen working. And it's something that I do because I need to make sure that people who fuck with me for one reason or another, whatever they follow me for, whether it's travel, whether it's the lifestyle, whether it's sales, business, marketing, whatever the fuck philosophy, shit posting, whatever the fuck I talk about, I need to make sure that I'm solidifying the person that comes here from a shit post with my actual message, which is, yo, you follow me, you're going to get actionable advice on life, and it's going to be delivered to you in a way that makes a lot of sense and that's genuinely going to make your life better. That's my entire job with Twitter. And
fuck with that, bro. I fuck with your Twitter shit, bro. Seriously, I follow you on my burner account.
Thank you, bro.
I fuck with your shit, bro.
Thank you. But that is the entire job of what me, especially if what I do on Twitter. And the more I do that, the more people get solidified and the more people join my communities and they become not only customers of mine, but they become better. They start making more money. They start learning how to do shit and their lives get better. They're able to take care of their family, put food on their table, take the girl out to dinner, buy a new car, whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
So that is my job. And I genuinely love, because it's selfish as fuck, but genuinely having a role in a lot of people's lives at scale that genuinely makes their lives better and helps them make money and gets them out of whatever shitty situation they're in. If they're in a shitty situation, if they hate their job, whatever that is. And so that's
feeling.
And that's why I do what I do, right? Not getting rich off it, but people don't understand that it's like, that's, I genuinely want, when I started this and I saw you come up, I saw a lot of guys come up, and it's like, I understand not only the marketing behind it, right? But I really genuinely just wanted to make an impact, because I've seen time and time again over the course of being in online business and being in marketing and being in these things and these circles online, a lot of people talking shit about shit that they don't know about. And I think where it came to relate this back to you is, where I think it came across with you is, you sounded like someone, because you didn't give everyone the full story and all the new followers the full story of every little fucking thing that you did and all the success that you had, right? That they thought you were talking about things that you don't know how to do. Because you didn't you didn't necessarily do the best job on the front end, solidifying them with the brand and the message and everything.
That shit pissed me off because I literally don't talk about shit I don't know how to do. Like, everything that
I've done, that's definitely misconstrued.
I know how to do a lot of shit. Like, why the fuck would I avoid that? And I know how to build systems. I know how to do cold outreach. I know how to network at scale. I know how to build relationships. I know how to hire. I know how to do all this shit. Why the fuck would I talk about something that I don't know how to do?
Completely agree with you. And like, that's so, and going back to the narrative control is like, dude, I know you know what you're talking about, right? But because it wasn't, you didn't take control of that narrative at scale is why I think the people started coming after you like that.
Yeah, for sure, man.
But I remember your system threads, dude. Like, I remember going back, and dude, I have some of your shit saved from like how to create a system, how to onboard clients and shit. I use it to this day. Like, I implemented it in my own business, bro. I remember, right? It works.
It's good to know, man.
X, Y, and Z, bro. It's like, and my heart. Being able to systemize stuff like that is fucking genius, right? And the thing is when you start operating at scale, you have to be able to systemize things and you have to be able to replicate yourself.
I had to systemize because, listen, let's say there was, I created a track. I sent it to Universal. They asked for a revision. Okay. This didn't happen much because I used to executive produce in-house. So let's say they asked for a revision. This is how it would work. They would ask for a revision. Our head of relations would literally have to go to Trello, put that revision in. Let's say they asked for like a new vocal mix, put that in for the vocal engineer. Vocal engineer would have to fucking make new versions. I would have to go get feedback. Okay. Over and over again until it was done. Then the fucking vocal engineer had to put it in Dropbox. Then the fucking producer had to be notified, take it out of Dropbox and or box at that moment in time and put it in the fucking track again and make a new track. Then I had to listen again and I had to give notes again. And then the track was done after maybe a couple of revisions. Then the producer had to fucking create stems, which are basically track file separated drums, synths, piano, whatever. Take that, put that back in box. Then our engineer had to go back and create files for it. Then we had to fucking hit up Universal. So it was for one little revision. We had these like fucking 10, 15 actions we needed to take. So we needed to be systemized to survive. There was no other way. We were like a music fucking factory. And that's where I got all my systems knowledge. I never read books about it. I never fucking got consulted about it. I literally created it on my own. And, systems are the lifeblood of a fucking business. I mean, you need incredibly high level systems, maybe not to hit 10, 20, 30K a month, but if you want to actually grow an agency and stop being a freelancer, which if you're a freelancer, you can make a fuck ton of money for sure, especially on performance-based deals. But if you want to grow into an agency, you fucking need like high level systems.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you got value out of my threads, bro. Seriously.
Well, yeah, because the thing is like, you know, coming from business credit and business loans, what was interesting is I knew what the systems were, right? But when I went into business for myself, and when you onboard a client, like every client can be different. So now I have a text message that it's literally 7 lines. And here's exactly, when I onboard a client, I get on the phone, it's 10 minutes and it's 7 lines. Here's exactly what you need to do. And here's exactly, you're going to do X, Y, and Z. And it's like, just bullet point, bullet point, bullet point. It works like fucking magic. It works great.
That's beautiful.
So, and I remember you're like some real system threads and like, dude, I can tell you know what you're talking about. And I think, you know, I think everything that happened on Twitter was people just had you a little misunderstood.
Yeah. It's all good. New doors open. No, like seriously, everyone who's talked shit about me, you know, all love, like I have nothing bad to say about you. I could understand why you talk shit. It's all what I bring it back to. And I remove the blame from the people who talk shit about me. I just bring it back to human nature. And I literally, I don't put any blame on them. I have no hate towards them whatsoever. It's just human nature and it's perfectly fine. Like I totally, obviously it messed with me a little bit. Like I think it would mess with anyone. But you know, I've learned to live and learn and forget. And even people that continue to talk shit about me.
Yeah.
Feel free. It's perfectly fine. Do your thing. And no hard feelings. Seriously. To anyone who talks shit. Even the people who talk the worst shit.
I think everybody listening, like, that's a great statement to make. Right? Because you're not a hateful person. Right? You're not a hate-filled guy. Like I said, I think the shit that got construed on Twitter was you were a little bit misunderstood. But I think over the course of this conversation, like people can realize, like, you're not a bad dude. Right? Like I've memed you a couple times. And first thing I said to you in Miami was like, look, dude, anything I said, I probably will say to your face too. Mm-hmm. Right. And I memed you a couple times. I got a laugh out of it. Hopefully you didn't take offense to it.
No, I'm good.
You know,
thanks, Ken.
I think it's an interesting study in how things can go wrong and also how you can start to bounce back from it. Right. And you're somebody now is like, you're bouncing back from losing, you know, a 25,000 follower account, 22,000 follower account on Twitter. I mean, you're doing your thing on LinkedIn. So talk to me, man, like, how's that going? Like, what are you up to there?
Man, it's going good. It's not even doing my thing on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is just one traffic source. And what I'm doing now is I have this thing called Agency Empire. And man, I put out two courses, one video conference series last year. I thought, what was the way I could help agency owners grow at scale? And what was the way I could help them with fucking everything? So this is what I came up with. It's a growth platform. It's community. I don't feel good talking about it even on this. I don't want to, you know, feel free to check it out. agencyempire.to. Feel free to fucking ignore this. But just helping agency owners scale from, you know, from zero to 100K, a shit ton of like really great courses. You know, we have this AI automated networking. We build referral alliances for our members. We have live events. We just had one with Gray McKenzie, who's a ClickUp fucking genius. We have discounts on like 31 software products. That's what I said. The thing with Luke, I didn't want them to see that shit.
Okay.
It's like we partner with Mailshake. We partner with Go High Level. We partner with Typeform. We partner with Reply.io, Close. We just partnered with Webflow, offering discounts to our members. So we have that. We have all these service partners in it. So it's just a way to help agency owners scale, provide everything they fucking need to scale. And that's my goal. Been put that out October 20th, four and a half months ago, and been focused on product development ever since. And now getting ready to really market this thing, push this thing forward. I want to get 1,000 members within like 6 to 7 months. That's my goal.
Nice. Do you mind sharing how many are inside now?
Paying members, about 150.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's literally, we just put it out. We had 132 members join. Probably half of them left within the first month because I said, hey, come in for a month, steal my shit. Huh?
It's really high ticket, right?
It's $98 a month.
Good for you.
And I'm thinking, like, I was talking to my friend Robbie Crabb, who I love this guy, trial lawyer, fucking teaches founders how to like pitch their company and stuff to investors. He's a real fucking stand-up dude. Love this guy. And he was saying you should 5X the price. So I might be 2-3xing it, 5xing it. I'm going to try to market it for 3-4 months before, you know, at this $98 price point, see how we do, and then maybe reevaluate from there. But the value in there is fucking like bananas.
Good for you, man.
Thank you, bro. And I fuck with Cashflow Syndicate. Like I was in there for the first like month or so, I think. And I fuck with what you guys are doing. Like, and I really took notes on, like the community you're building. I've had a little bit of trouble with like getting people very like connected.
Yeah.
And I love how like everyone comes in there and everyone like fucks with each other like from day one and just is so supportive. So like I really took a lot of notes on how connected you guys are, and I like try to apply. I'm a fucking serial note taker. I signed up to all these different competitor communities and communities in other industries, whatever. Even Utopia, fucking shout out to Wizard Ecom. He's killing it. And took so many fucking notes on how I could improve my shit. And I think you guys are doing a wonderful job.
Thank you, man. What did you, if you don't mind me asking, like in terms of Cashflow Syndicate, like what did you learn from what we did? Like, what are some things that you saw and you were able to implement in your business?
Man, I think it's just how warm you were to new members, and how the thing is with me, like I'm using Circle and Telegram for my messaging. So it's like Discord. Everyone was so active in there. Like for me, it's hard. It's, you know, they're not like fucking not sending any messages, but it's hard to get my members very engaged. So I took some notes. Okay, maybe I should use Discord. You guys have all these channels open. These are good channels to have. Okay, maybe I should have a channel about sales, a channel about this and that. And just the culture you guys have in there. Like it's a real culture, especially with Utopia as well. Like how they say, how Wizard Ecom says, our Utopia, how he has that manifesto, how he like makes everyone feel like they're a piece of Utopia, right? They're a part of Utopia. It's a fucking beautiful thing. And I try to just embody that with Agency Empire. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that because that's something that, and at the end of the day, like I'm a product guy, right? Like not only do I know sales, I know a lot about a lot of things, but I know when you create a phenomenal product, the product, and in terms of business, like the product is always the reason people come back. The product is why people buy in, but the culture is why people stay. And the more that I can facilitate, and I have a lot of ideas on culture. I'm not going to get into them now, but
I'd love to hear them privately. Maybe
the culture is why people stay. And I think the brilliant thing that we've done within Cashflow Syndicate is create a culture that facilitates success. You haven't been in there for a while, but inside of Cashflow Syndicate. So when you join, we want to know why you joined, right? So there's two channels, there's wins and there's whys. The why is why you joined, right? Why did you get inside in the first place, right? And then the wins are people after that they joined, literally posting screenshots of them making thousands of dollars. I think there's probably been about $250,000 that have been generated through the members throughout the group in business, right? Guys coming in with 9 to 5, starting their own agencies, closing deals, closing revenue. And as a new, and what we've done, because obviously the price point is we want to bring in as many new people as possible, people who are new to business. I think we've created the best community in the world for people who want to become high-level salespeople, email marketers, copywriters, freelancers, SMMA agency owners, web design, and SEO. I think we've created genuinely the best community in the world that exists for people to go from zero to 10K. Hmm. And I just use 10K as like an arbitrary metric. We got guys in there doing.
Hey, send them my way once they hit 10K.
you know, there's guys in there that are doing $60,000-$70,000 a month, yeah. Right? So what I did was I created a system where if you're brand new coming in, there's something called Syndicate Achievements. And as people progress, so as you start to level up and you get a ranking within the Discord, right? Within the community, you get a ranking.
Gamification, baby. That's the key.
But in order to earn the ranks, you have to go through the entire sales course that I created. I don't know if you watched it or went through it. You go through the entire sales course. You take notes on the sales course. Then you make your first 10 calls. You send your first 10 Loom videos. You send your first 10 emails and you do X, Y, and Z, right? So there's a bunch of accomplishments that if you're a brand new person starting, you can follow these things. You can complete these achievements and start getting number one experience in the field. Start to create that skill stack that we talk about all the time about people creating. And then three, you start making money because action breeds results. Action breeds results, right? Something that I'm working on now is taking an incredibly active role in my own business because we're doing well. But when I take a super active role and I go incredibly hands-on and I start ripping cold calls again, what's going to happen is the business is going to fucking double or triple. And so when a new person comes in, literally, like, we've got guys who come in, they'll rank up, they'll go through the initiate level, right? The first level, and then bam, then they're making $3,000 a month. Or they make, or they just, they close a deal for $1,500 or a copywriting deal on Upwork for $500. And so what it's done is not only create culture, but able to get new guys paid. Everyone always asks, bro. Everyone always asks when they start out, I don't know where to start. Where do I start? What business model do I start? Well, we give you four or five of them. And all you need to do is pick one and see if you like it and see if you can run with it. And I, like I said, I genuinely believe we created the best community in the world.
I'm writing that down. That's good shit. That's good shit.
And it's done deliberately. And now you got guys coming in who are completely brand new, who are getting jobs, closing deals as inbound closers. They're trying out copywriting. They're reading the necessary material and they get their first client for $250, $500. And they do emails or they start sending emails or like, hey, I'm going to try this thing. Because all of the resources for every single one of these business models, whether it's being in sales, literally, I have my fundamental sales course of how I closed all the fucking business.
I think I read a little bit of that. You put it out in the PDF when you first launched, right?
That was a credit. That was credit.
Yes. That's what
now, it was. But the thing is like all of the material is there. Everything is there. If you want to build an email marketing business, you're learning from two guys who've done a shit ton of revenue in email marketing, right? You're also learning from
shout out to Mason,
who's closed a lot of deals, right? Like I know how to sell. I can sell any product. I can sell ice to the Eskimos, right? You're learning from verified people who have done it. And I think that's where the difference is between a lot of these other communities that exist online and what Cashflow Syndicate is. And what it's done is created a culture, not only this podcast, but the stuff that we put out on Twitter. And I think we do a horrific job of promoting Cashflow Syndicate on Twitter and the acquisition channels right now, because there are so many people making money that it's almost criminal that we're not promoting it five times a day.
If you're watching this, fucking join Cashflow Syndicate right fucking now, because Ty Frankel said so.
You have the Ty Frankel endorsement. But yes, so my point is like culture is why people stay, bro. Kanye West is a billionaire off selling shoes because he created culture, not a billionaire off music. Drake creates culture, right? Like everyone and their mom has an Instagram caption with a Drake lyric. I probably have 15 out of 22 posts on my profile. Like Elon Musk creates culture. Jeff Bezos with Amazon, he facilitates the creation of culture because he provides a service to so many people. And so I think the more that you create culture in whatever you're doing, whether it's agency empire, whether it's Cashflow Syndicate, whether it's one of these things, you want to focus on creating the culture of why people stay. And that's how you create lifelong relationships. People, if you can create an identity, right, and you create this culture where people really identify with it, they're going to be so much more inclined to not only do business with you, but build a network and develop that relationship with you, because you've created a culture that they identify with, a narrative that they identify with, and that also helps change the trajectory of their lives.
And they're never going to leave. If they're a part of a culture, fucking churn rate is zero. Exactly. Like if they feel like they're it's their group, it's their tribe, they're one of many, like they will never fucking leave you. And yeah, that's the secret to churn, I think, just in these communities, in the community business model, keeping the churn, you know, between 5 and 10% is just culture, culture, culture. Obviously it's value and it's a lot of other things. Like you can have all these cancellation win back sequences and all that shit. Course nudges, whatever, but it's really just the culture. It's really the culture.
Literally, fundamentally, and I break down our entire model with that is acquisition plus the creation of culture. And that's it. People who are going to leave are going to leave, right? Like people who are going to unsubscribe, people are going to leave. Like they're probably not people that wanted to be successful anyway, right? And because it's so low ticket, even at $98 a month for your stuff, it's so low ticket that people are just, okay, let me try it out, right? But the goal is to get like, say like 10,000, 100,000 people in. And then like, even if half of them stay, that's still 55,000 to 50,000 people that really want to be successful and are really hungry for. And I think
just stacking marketing. So what I've been doing late is I literally just been focused on product for 4.5 months, making this fucking insane. I think I've done that 2-3 months out for like, we have all these like automation things on the back end, but what was I saying? I fucking finished this whole bottle of rosé, dude. What was I saying? Totally lost my train of thought.
In a community, I don't know, bro.
I don't know what I was saying. Go ahead,
bro. I think this has been a great conversation, man.
Dude, I really appreciate it, David. It was great meeting you, bro. There was a surprise at the wharf, meeting you. I think we really had a great convo, me, you. Owen popped up at the end there. He's a cool guy as well. And dude, seriously, really glad to have met you. When you come to Miami, we got to kick it next time for sure.
Sure, man. At the end of the day, man, like I said, like, you know, what happened, hindsight is 2020. What has happened has happened. But I think, like I said, and you guys listening to this, like, understand, like, Ty's not a bad guy. He did have the mob come after him with pitchforks and fire. But we learn from our mistakes and we stay resilient and we keep pushing.
Yes, sir. That's what you got to do.
So, Ty, you know, I don't know if you want some of the people to follow you on Instagram. Where can we find you on LinkedIn?
I don't think people listening will care to follow me on Instagram.
No worries, brother. No worries. but, you know, for everyone listening, that's been episode 4. And thank you for listening, man. It's been a great conversation.
Appreciate the time, David. Seriously, thank you for having me on, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely.